Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am joined by my colleague at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Kurt Hoge, covering the Milwaukee Brewers. What a week. Oh, my gosh. Maybe one of the best weeks in franchise history. Is it on the shortlist of greatest weeks in franchise history? There's so much that we took in. And we are going to break it all down. We are watching the Major League Baseball draft as we record this. So there could be some twists and turns. There's not like going to be traded picks or anything quite that twisty. But who knows? Who knows what's going on right now? We might even have to stop halfway through this to take a break if the Brewers pick before we can get this done. Kurt, this week was insane, man. You have the Jacob Mizrowski all-star stuff. You had them winning every single game, including all three against the Dodgers. You had a couple walk-offs. You had the Andrew Vaughnissance. The Andrew Vaughnissance is upon us. And I have an interview with him. Amazing. That's going to be happening after this conversation. Andrew Vaughn is on the docket. Anthony Siegler is on the docket today. We're doing two for the price of one. Mainly because those interviews were short and I want to get them in there. And I think we want to hear from both of them. So that's coming up. Kurt, how are you? Have you been able to take a breath? This is wild. We're at the All-Star break, but man, did the Brewers sing into the All-Star break. 16 games over 500. What is going on?
I don't know. I never wrong just early. A couple podcasts ago, might have been the last one I did. No, it was the one we pre-recorded where JR, you may recall, I said two sweeps. Just early.
That was for the Pirates. Who was on that homestand? The Mets? Pirates Mets? No, Pirates Rockies.
Pirates Rockies, yeah.
Well, it should have been two sweeps. I think that if you will absolutely make that trade, you get the sweep of the Dodgers, the best team in baseball over the last several years. They are not playing well, but the Brewers got them at the right time. And then the Nationals, in a perfect trap series scenario, they come in, they win two games handily. They steal one. They get that stolen game that I talked about a few podcasts ago. Like, they've lost some games that they absolutely, like against the Pirates, where they gave up a home run. Or was that the Rockies? Orlando Arcia, a home run with two outs in the ninth. Are they going to steal a game back? Well, buddy, they did that against the Washington Nationals on Saturday. Like you said, two sweeps, not wrong, just early. Kurt, that is the best place to be. Knowing that you're right eventually is really the key to everything. Just knowing in life that you're going to be right at everything at some point in the future. And the Milwaukee Brewers are right. Kurt, they're like, what is going on? What's happening? They're like a game and a half behind the Dodgers, maybe, for the best record in the National League. They are second in the league in run differential. They are fourth in all of baseball in run differential, and they're within shouting distance of the Tigers, who are awesome. They are one game behind the Cubs still, which I guess stinks. Four games up in the nearest wild card threat, top wild card spot. Kurt, this was not what was foretold on this podcast. By me specifically, this was not what was foretold. We have to talk a lot about Jacob Mizrowski. 82 wins. That's what I thought they were going to have at the end of the year. It's possible they have that by the start of September at this rate.
That would be pretty incredible because they're on pace to win like 94 games right now.
Yeah.
So that
would be astonishing.
Maybe JR. Maybe they win 101 games. Probably not.
Probably not. I think we have to start with Jacob Mizrowski. There is a lot to discuss, but certainly the biggest story around baseball is what happened this week with Mizrowski. Another tremendous outing against the Dodgers. High visibility on TBS. He shoves. It's great. The Brewers win 3-1. Everybody in that game is throwing 99 miles an hour. And then a couple days later, we learn that Mizrowski has been named to the All-Star team. The rookie pitcher who has five starts, who just arrived in June, is going to the All-Star game in July. He has dramatically reset the record for fewest appearances before being named to an All-Star team. That's super crazy. I mean, it's awesome. I mean, it's clearly Major League Baseball saying we want to see this exciting player that everyone is juiced about across baseball in the All-Star game. A lot of people have a problem with that, including other members of certainly the Philadelphia Phillies and other teams and commentators who are confused why somebody with so little MLB experience would get a nod into the All-Star game. Kurt, my jaw dropped. Like, this was when this news broke, that was a shocker. Like, there's just not much that can shock you over the course of 162 games. You see a lot, but that blew my mind. We got to get into the discourse. Is it a good idea to put a guy, even a guy that we think is fantastic, into the All-Star game after five starts? What are you thinking about that, Kurt?
There's a lot of ways to tackle this. To answer your question, there's not even a good way to answer that question, JR. But I do think that from a marketing strategy, from a league standpoint, it does make sense to get someone like Skeens, get someone like Mizorowski. They didn't do it with Ellie, but like, given the precedent that they're kind of setting now, they should have done it with Ellie. Get someone buzzy like that. Apparently all the buzzy prospects play in the National League Central. Who knew?
Seems that way.
Get like, if you can pick a legend to make the All-Star game. I think if you designated a spot for like a guy who wouldn't otherwise make it, a buzzy prospect, I think that could make some sense too. Now you get into all the caveats, all these worlds in baseball where, the Rockies got Holiday's kid. How about
yes,
that?
They did. Ethan Holiday going to the Rockies.
That's pretty awesome. That's a cool baseball thing that just happened there. Anyway,
a lot of people thought he was going to go number one overall, and he fell to number five. No, number four. But that's crazy.
I know nothing about this draft, and I'm about to cover it as soon as we hop off this. So
yeah.
Godspeed to me and you and everyone else that has no idea what they're doing. But baseball is, of course, too stodgy. It always has been, and it always will be. And like, maybe that's part of we don't like it, but we like deep down kind of appreciate it, and that's what separates it from other sports. But it does feel like there's room to maneuver around the edges a little bit. Like, you know, an All-Star appearance, sure, I think it should still mean a lot. And I think that's where a lot of the qualms with this come is, you know, having that All-Star spot next to your name on your baseball reference page, or does this matter in Hall of Fame voting? Maybe a little bit, but I don't think it matters that much to take it this seriously is where I ultimately land here. Jacob Mizorowski is going to get eyeballs watching this game. He's going to pop 102 probably on the radar gun, and it's going to be exciting for baseball fans to see that. And ultimately, I think that's part of what the All-Star game is. It's a showcase of the best players in baseball, and it's also a showcase of the most exciting ones. Now, that is a fine line to walk because you do want to reward the most deserving players, but we are also at a point where like they had awarded most of the deserving pitchers, and then the Phillies frustrations over this, you can understand it, but you also say, well, Suarez didn't want to go and Christopher Sanchez is pitching Sunday, which kind of sucks to suck. That's just like, they're not going to pick you. If you're pitching Sunday, that's just really unfortunate. So I don't know. I don't know if I really took a hard line stance on anything there, JR, but it's fine. It's fine. It's fine, guys. It's fine. Let's all calm down a little bit.
We talked to Christian Yelich, who is a regular at the All-Star game. I mean, he's only made a couple appearances, but still knows a thing or two about appearing in All-Star games. We talked to Trevor Megill, who was named as an All-Star replacement, which we will talk about, for Freddy Peralta. So he's going to the All-Star game and kind of got their thoughts on this topic. And there's some nuts and bolts you have to consider. The Phillies were mad and seemingly don't have a case because the two pitchers that made the obvious sense that were not selected, as we found out through all of this, had been asked to attend and could not because either A, they were pitching too late in the week, or B, they didn't want to commit to saying we could throw an inning, you know, like we need our rest, or we'd like the rest. Both Christopher Sanchez and Ranger Suarez were All-Stars last year, so they've done it once before. And it sounds like a lot of people were asked. We've had a really big bumper crop of pitchers who were asked to, who were invited to the All-Star game, named All-Stars, and then backed out for various reasons because they're pitching late in the week, like Freddy Peralta. I mean, there's a who's who name list of names that cannot play that have led to new guys getting named. Drew Rasmussen, former Brewers pitcher, among them. And I think so. I think that plays into it a little bit. We just have a really high volume of guys this year, higher anecdotally than we've seen, that don't want to play. And so I think Major League Baseball is just, you know, they keep going further and down the list. Like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if Mizorowski were there? Well, sure, but let's ask a few other people first. They did. And so that's important to bring up. I do think in a vacuum, you could still argue there's going to be somebody who has put in their dues, who's having a very good year, too great year, but at this point, maybe just even very good year, who maybe has a greater case to go to an All-Star game, which is still very meaningful to players, over somebody who did just get here. And yes, you want to consider the entertainment value. Baseball has notoriously been ripped for not caring enough about entertainment value, not marketing its players. This is one of the big showcases of the year. It is the right moment to do that. And I don't think the players are going to blame Mizorowski. You know, he's not the guy making this call. He's not going to say no if somebody's like, do you want to pitch in the All-Star game? That's ridiculous. So I don't think it's going to come down on him. It's a question of baseball, I guess, like unspoken ethics on the All-Star game. Do you reward a player even if he's choice, you know, plan D, E, and F, do you reward that player over a guy who just got here? I can understand that. I think that there is some wisdom there. On the other hand, Jacob Mizorowski shoves, and I want to see him shove in the All-Star game. That's going to be wild. I can't wait to see it. It's going to be super, super fun. And I am blown away that they did this, that Major League Baseball made this choice, and I am all here for it. It's going to be a super great time. I can't believe Jacob Mizorowski, who got here in June, is going to the All-Star game. I can't believe it.
I think I ultimately reached a place like of just being fine with the league doing this because baseball, like you mentioned, has been ripped for not marketing its young stars. That is like the thing that this league has been criticized for over the last 10, 15 years when you compare it to the NFL and the NBA. It's like, well, why aren't you able to market Mike Trout and players like that? Well, guess what they're doing here? They're marketing their young stars. And so, you know what? If we criticize them for it, they're doing the thing that you said you wanted them to do, albeit in a bit of an unconventional way. But ultimately, I think it's fine. And I hope the Philadelphia Phillies will get over it because they should, because their guys could have gone. It would not have required that much different of circumstances for them to have just, you know, accepted the invite. Now, sure, like I think MLB could have solved a lot of problems here by just naming Christopher Sanchez an All-Star and then replacing him with Miz.
Should have done that.
And that, like, no harm is done by that. But
yeah, should have done that.
They clearly, when they are bringing someone on as a replacement, that clearly means you are playing.
Yes. I think that's right. It is a circumstantial thing where, of course, he would have been an All-Star. It's just that they didn't want to replace somebody with another guy that they would immediately have to replace. They did not want to do that. And it just so happens that he is pitching when he is pitching, and they couldn't do that. He wasn't in that first group of guys. So he kind of got squeezed out in a circumstances game, and they went with somebody who's going to be available to pitch. I'd be curious to know what Dave Roberts ends up doing. I mean, I would think that he's consulting with Major League Baseball on some of these decisions and probably would like to see Mizorowski pitch too, especially after Mizorowski carved up his Dodgers in another spectacular outing, one outing after he struggled for the first time against the Mets. He really bounced back in the best way possible. We know that Trevor McGill is probably going to pitch in the All-Star game on Tuesday. I don't know. You know, there aren't a ton, you know, there will be some guys, if everybody pitches, you know, an inning, there's only nine of those. So somebody is not going to get to pitch. I hope Miz pitches, but even if he doesn't, it's obviously a really cool thing and a cool opportunity for him. The Dodgers sweep, Kurt, you know, like low key that outing by Mizorowski is bigger than just beating the Dodgers 3-1 or whatever the score was. It's, you know, he had been down in velocity and he had not looked good against the Mets. It was the first time a team seemed to have really figured him out. And then he shows up in a playoff type setting, you know, at American Family Field against Los Angeles. Everybody brought it in that venue. It wasn't a sellout, but it was still a really good crowd for a weekday night game. And he really delivered. And everybody in that game is throwing hard. You had McGill at the back end. You had Jared Koenig, who throws 99 now. Abner Uribe showed up in that game. I mean, this was like all the Brewers stars were out. And to sweep the Dodgers at home, first time that has been done in franchise history. I do think the Dodgers aren't playing well right now. They certainly are banged up a little bit, and it just doesn't seem like they got their best. But man, Kurt, Oh no, what? Oh, they're not doing their best. It's sad, right?
Who cares? It's the Dodgers.
Dang right.
You're paying this roster, what, 350 mil? No, there are no excuses. There are no excuses. I'm not caveating that sweep one bit. Not one.
Absolutely
bit.
Not. It's just hard to find a more satisfying week of baseball. I think you probably could in franchise history, but to sweep the Dodgers especially is super, super satisfying. And an announcement, Kurt, that this team is not just they're white hot right now. Obviously the Brewers will cool off at some point, but they are not a team that is simply, you know, like this is a team that can beat anybody. Like they're extraordinarily real at this point. Again, this is just not something I predicted for this season, but, in that Dodgers series, was there anything that jumped out at you? Like, okay, they're really for real. This is not just a flash in the pan. Certainly their record at this point would indicate that, but they're a team that can compete with anybody and can actually, I'll just say, can actually compete and get to a World Series.
I think it's the way they overpowered the Dodgers on the mound. They did it in the
starters
game
were awesome.
They set the record for fastest velo in a game in baseball history. And that they just found a lot of different ways to keep the Dodgers at bay. Assuming at this point, it feels, you know, like you're making a pretty safe assumption, assuming they can make it to October. This is a pitching staff that, while they have been, the Brewers have had teams built around pitching in recent years, is a little bit different. And a lot of that is Mizorowski. Do you feel the same way? Like there's the way that they can compile it is just a little bit different when you add in Ashby and you start looking at like the various guys that are going to be in various roles. Who knows? Like where's Quinn Priester fit in? This version of Brandon Woodruff has been quite good. There are so many avenues and so many different arsenals and like arm slots and stuff and different ways to attack that they have a lot of versatility. And then, at the front of that is the best version of Freddie Peralta that we've seen. And also Jacob Mizorowski, who he might just be legit. He might just be a legit number one ace frontline starter in baseball. And whether or not he like realizes that potential this year, it's certainly a weapon in, you know, however you want to deploy him in a postseason series. So, you know, if the Brewers are going to make a long run, you can kind of see the path starting to lay itself out. And this week was a big step toward that. Like you said, they're not going to play this well. They're not going to pitch this well the rest of the season, but they are going to pitch pretty well probably the rest of the year. Just a total, not just a great week for the Brewers. JR, what a jam-packed week too. There was something at every step of the way, every corner, every turn. There was something new that like kept us and our jobs busy, kept social media buzzing. I don't need like 3-3 down wouldn't even contain it all this week.
No, you're right.
It was endless, something every day.
Even on their off day, when Jacob Mizorowski was hanging out at the Miller Brewery, that was making, you know, getting some attention. Freddie Peralta Sunday with that second start of the week, you know, six straight starts now that he has come away with the W. I believe that's the most in Brewers franchise history in quite a while. I think you have to go back to Cal Eldred to find somebody with a longer streak of actual like wins in their starts. He's been excellent. He's been really taking it up a notch. He's not going to pitch in the All-Star game, but he is an All-Star. He'll be going and he'll get to take it all in. He's been in an All-Star game before, struck out all three guys he faced. That's probably good enough. Probably good enough if he doesn't end up making it back at any point, but he looks like right now a multi-year All-Star. He looks really confident out there, and that's obviously, you know, obviously you pair him with Mizrowski and also a little Brandon Woodruff in there as well. Woodruff with 10 strikeouts on Saturday and 4 1/3 inning. That's a crazy good rotation. And I think for the, you know, you were talking about how good the pitching is. It's the safety net for me that really resonates. You know, they could, I obviously you don't want them to lose a guy, but if they do, they're covered. You know, they've got so many guys that you can rely on right now. It's Tobias Myers who got called up this week, who's pitching very well in AAA and is a guy who could be there. It's Ashby, like you said, or piecing something together with Ashby and Hall. It's Quinn Priester. It's Logan Henderson if they want to get him back up here. It's Nestor Cortez, who's going to be ready any minute. He's already done a rehab start and looked really, really good. Like, they have so many guys that can fit in. Chad Patrick that can fit in, and that's pretty comforting. The Woodruff encore, mentioned it. That game ends up being won in a crazy ninth inning rally involving Andrew Vaughn and Caleb Durbin. So that was fun. But 10 strikeouts in four and a third or 4 2/3? That another, I think, kind of awesome performance. Now, he did get hit a little bit. He did walk a couple guys. No walks in that game. He did get hit a little bit, and that did lead to some runs. So the Brewers elected to pull him early. But again, like, the Miami thing wasn't a flash in the pan. Brandon Woodruff is real, right? Like, this is something you could see. Do you think it's going to be like this, where they keep him limited and it's only five innings the way it kind of is with Mizrowski? Or do you think they're going to ramp this up and we're going to see seven inning Brandon Woodruff at some point?
Oh, I think they're going to ramp this up, especially as he continues to ramp it up. You think the thing that Pat Murphy mentioned after his start on Saturday was, this is how it looks at 91, 92, 93. Now imagine if the velocity as we keep going comes back, because that's a very real possibility. I don't know if I would expect 97 necessarily, but if you can sit 94, sit 95. And the thing that he has seemingly figured out is he's got a much better idea than a month or 2 months ago of how to pitch with the stuff he currently has. And it's a lot more spot-based and command-based rather than throwing the crap out of the ball. So, yeah, while he wasn't necessarily as dominant as a 10 strikeout, no walk line would suggest in that national start, they were taking a lot of fastballs. Kind of confused by just the Nationals in general are a very confusing team to me right now. And yeah, a lot of their approach in that game went along those lines as well. So, but nevertheless, you still struck out 10 in a big league game in not even five innings. Pretty impressive. Clearly the stuff is performing, and him and the Brewers seem to be having a pretty good idea of where he's at and what the path is with where he's at to be a successful big league starter. Like we said, look, if he's just like an average starter, that's pretty good. And I think now your expectation is maybe ticked up because he's commanding the ball so well. He's currently, and this shouldn't be a huge surprise to anyone, but he's their best command pitcher right now. And when you mix in all the other things we know about him, about the person and the competitor on the mound, that's a really good pathway for success. And one of the big reasons that the outlook of this team has shifted so much, if you think compared to where it was 2 months ago or the start of the season, like, did you expect the best half of Freddie Peralta's career? I don't think anyone, I think we have high expectations for Freddie, but he's been pretty consistent at like that 3.6, 3.7 ERA. Not this. He would have to have a pretty rough second half to match that 3.6, 3.7 ERA for the season. So we're looking at like top of his game, Freddie Peralta. We're looking at Jacob Mizrowski being a legit big league starter, frontline starter who can just dominate the Los Angeles Dodgers. Brandon Woodruff looks way better than expected. Quinn Priester wasn't on people's radars, and then when he was on people's radars, he certainly wasn't expected to do this. Jose Quintana just keeps doing the dang thing somehow, and that is probably where the fact that they've just blown our expectations so much, well, you can kind of line it up, right? There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 starters, and they're all just pitching. We probably expected good things out of all of them, but they're pitching even better than what we could have expected.
And then there's Andrew Vaughn, a guy who we mentioned last week as probably getting called up to replace an injured Rhys Hoskins. Since we potted last, he has 10 RBIs. He's hit home runs galore. He hit a home run in his very first plate appearance as a member of the Milwaukee Brewers. That's a small list of people. First guy since Gabe Gross pulled that off back in 2006. He had a clutch two-run double with in the ninth inning on Saturday that allowed the Brewers to stage that unbelievable rally. Amazing, right? I mean, just truly amazing. And I think we're probably still, I mean, 1 week obviously does not change the fact that Andrew Vaughn has a lot of track record of, you know, not necessarily being somebody that you can rely on at the long for the long haul at first base, but already I feel like they've gotten full value out of the trade of Aaron Civale to the White Sox. Aaron Civale is not lighting it up or anything in Chicago. Like, he's fine if you know, like, need a fifth starter or something. Like, that's
oh, he's light in. Oh, he's lighting it up the scoreboard.
not the way that you want it to be lighting up. Meanwhile, Andrew Vaughn has absolutely had just an incredible week, and I don't, you know, when, as we get closer to the trade deadline, I think first base is probably in the spotlight here. You know, that's an opportunity for them with Rhys Hoskins. We learned this week is going to be out for as many as 6 weeks, maybe even a little longer. First base is then kind of open. It's Jake Bowers and it's Andrew Vaughn in the short term. I don't know if this would necessarily convince them. Maybe we don't need to add a bat at first base to help our cause. You know, Rhys Hoskins will be back probably before September. So there's at least that. I don't know. Your thoughts on Andrew Vaughn going through an amazing first week as a member of the Milwaukee Brewers.
Hang the sign, hang the banner.
Vaughn's Valley. Where is our Vaughn's Valley sign?
What are we doing? Okay. So having seen that sign, that thing definitely did not make it.
What do you mean? Like, it didn't survive?
There's no way
the 90s?
Thing survived. No, no.
Of course not. No, no, no. Absolutely not. It got torn. It's in a dumpster somewhere. Or it was.
You thought the Brewers were a lower market franchise now? That sign was like they handmade it.
Yeah, that is something that was made at Kinko's. You're right, handmade. It wasn't even Kinko's. No, they need to know.
If the Brewers aren't going to make a Vaughn's Valley sign, the fans need to take it upon themselves and make it maybe that first base pocket, make that Vaughn's Valley.
You could. I need it in the left field bleachers is what I need. Okay. But I need it to be as low cost, you know, ugly as the first sign was.
Sure,
I need it to be that.
Yeah. And that's fitting. Andrew Vaughn's like a low profile, yes. Very, very chill
blue collar
guy. Blue collar guy, yes. Cal grad. Well, I don't know if he graduated, but
that's not a blue collar. We're not helping the blue collar. You know,
literally blue collar.
Yes, for the Milwaukee Brewers, very good. Number 3 overall draft pick a few years back, won the Golden Spikes as the best player. Blue collar probably isn't the proper, you know, the proper way to look at it. However, he has mashed, and I need that Vaughn's Valley sign. I need them to find a way to recreate that ugly, ugly eyesore of a thing that just very simply in letters, like the lettering on the side of Milwaukee County Stadium, which was just letters. You know, no fancy font. No, just like, so you can see this from space. Here's Milwaukee County Stadium. I need that Vaughn's Valley sign. And I need it soon. I need it soon. Somebody has to make that.
What an insane week, but what better encapsulation of a ridiculous week for the Milwaukee Brewers than Andrew Vaughn homering in his first at bat off one of the best pitchers in the National League this year, Yoshinobu Yamamoto.
Who did not get out of the first inning? Insanity.
Get out of the first inning. Good. Glad we checked that off the three up, three down ones that we don't have to get to now.
Yeah.
And then
5 runs, 2/3 of an inning. He's going to, well, he was named to the All-Star team. Unbelievable stuff.
Tying the game in the 9th inning 2 days later, I think. Yeah, 2 days later with a broken bat single. Tying the game in the ninth, homering in the next game. Tying the game in the 9th inning the next day with a 2-run double. And then, then he was on the bench Sunday. But RBIs in 5 straight games. Like, we are not expecting this from Andrew Vaughn. I think you still need to be a little bit slow on the roll to expect him to fully replace the Rhys Hoskins production, like, long-term in every at-bat. I have offered this theory right on the pod before, that when hitters come up to the big leagues, they have a week. You have a week. The league doesn't know you yet. They haven't figured you out yet. When guys come up to the big leagues, they mash. But Andrew Vaughn's a little different case. I get it. Like, the book is already out on him.
The book's there.
And he is mashing. And the book also includes a little bit of, like, oh, he's been really good before in his career. So maybe that's the reason to be a little more optimistic, and he can hit for power and do that for you.
Yeah, I would agree. This is like the Owen Miller principle. Like, he could even be a full good month, although that wasn't like his first big league experience.
Well, I think Andrew Vaughn's a better hitter than Owen Miller ever was.
Agreed.
He certainly is not as bad of a hitter as he was with the White Sox. So if you're not if you just need him and Bowers to be fine for a month, I think you can get that. I have no idea how this impacts their first base decisions long term. It probably shouldn't. Like, they have enough to get them at the very least till Rhys Hoskins gets back.
What are they going to do here at the trade deadline? I mean, I know we're still 2 weeks away, but are they going to do anything? At some point, like, that we've been to this place before where it's like, oh, this is the team. This is the team to go in on. But they've been in this situation before and then have just like improved around the edges. Is there any hope, you think, that they approach it differently? Or it's just going to be the same thing where they like tweak it here and there and go with dance with the one that brought them, I guess.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of hope or optimism in that regard, because how do I put this? Ownership matters in Major League Baseball.
That's true.
And they are not the ones making the trades and making the evaluations. But when you have a and I'm not saying this is going to be the case, but if there is a push from that group to put more resources into this team at the trade deadline by giving away prospects, guess what your general manager is going to try to do? And the sense that I get, JR, is that after all these years of, all this success, this team at this moment, right up to the deadline, feels like it has something. And I think the sense that I get is that sense that the fans feel is also something that ownership might feel. That I don't think the Brewers are going to deviate entirely from their general plan. Like, they're not going to blow the whole thing up. The way they operate is pretty successful. And like, the reason they're in this year after year is partially because they never go all the way in. And that's probably not a wise thing to do. But if there is a team roster construction wise that just doesn't need like depth, just needs top end potential, it's this year's Brewers. And yeah, you sort of start getting the sense that that people that have a lot of say and a lot of power would like to see more investment at the deadline. Let's go for it. Let's go for it a little more. Maybe not all the way in, but let's go for it this year.
One area that they perhaps could look to improve is shortstop. Joey Ortiz, this is not the lowest he's been by any means. He had a couple really good weeks in a row, and it seemed like we were turning a corner. He had some issues again where, in Miami starting and then early this week, swing decision wise. And Pat Murphy vocalized that. He said, yeah, we basically, when he wasn't in the starting lineup back to back days, you guys asked about it. And he said, yeah, the manager's upset with him. He's not making good swing decisions. He's taking pitches down the middle and he's swinging at pitches outside the zone. And then we saw that in the Dodgers series when he did play. There's one at bat on Wednesday that really sticks out in my head where he took two pitches down the middle and then swung at a high pitch. Now, that was against Tyler Glasnow, who rules. So that's not a microcosm necessarily, but it is part of a trend. And starting to feel like, is Joey Ortiz long term? Like, that seems crazy to say, and I don't want to like.
No, I think it's fair. I think it's fair, because not only are the lack of results there, but there was a quote in there that I think people didn't pay as much attention to as the one where Murphy said, "Yeah, the manager's pissed at him," and it's that Murphy followed that up and he said, "We've given him lots of chances, chance after chance after chance. This guy's been playing every day." And he has not figured out the swing decision thing at all. It's only gotten worse this year, and we already had him as the second worst on the team last year. He just doesn't swing. He's not aggressive enough in the zone. So some of like the ingredients are not lining up for you to have. And I've kind of held out hope that Ortiz would turn the corner and give you some production. And while he was better, I think, in the month of June and has had some success, it's starting to be a real question for the rest of the year. If like, if you don't go address this position at the deadline, like you still have no other options and you just have to ride Joey Ortiz out. So maybe it's not something they like go out and get. I don't know what sort of splash shortstops are available, right? You think of some of the big players that'll be out there. Eugenio Suarez is one at third base, but that's not shortstop. So nope. It's a spot that like the Brewers should address. If you have aspirations of winning a World Series, a shortstop who's OPSing 550 is not going to cut it for you for a month in the playoffs. At least some semblance of a different option. Andrew Monasterio is like he's a great guy in his role, but that's not the solution either. So I don't know how you address shortstop at the deadline, but maybe that is the splash spot that helps put the Brewers over the top. Right now, this lineup has no weakness. It has no black holes except at shortstop. Everyone's OPS is between 698, William Contreras, and 800. Everyone's. That's insane.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you got to think William Contreras is going to get, you know, we saw some pretty good swings from him this week. Maybe that's a small sample sign that he's going to be able to elevate the ball a little bit better. He'd had a couple doubles. He hit a ball to the warning track in the game that they won in walk-off fashion on Wednesday. Like, maybe. I don't know. It's been a rough year for him, but I have belief that 696 is not where he ends up. I don't know with Joey Ortiz. There was some debate about whether Pat Murphy handled that right, because it is rare to see a manager basically call out a player. And it's also fair, I think, to wonder, is sitting a guy down really the solution to improving his swing decisions? Like, it's not that he's being stubborn or, you know, needs to be sent a message. He just doesn't recognize the pitches he needs to swing at. Like, I don't know if necessarily approaching it like that is the way to do it. But what it signals to me is I can't imagine this was their first move. This wasn't like, oh, we're gonna pick on Joey Ortiz today in the media and make it clear how frustrated we are. Like, that there's been a lot of conversations, I would think, before that, behind the scenes. You know, they're doing whatever they can to get this to work. They're trying a lot of things, and I think this is probably pretty far down the list of things to try, which is to, I don't want to say embarrass the guy, but make it clear that he's not doing what they want him to do. That feels to me like, you know, you're tiptoeing up to, we're looking for other options. And they've got guys down in the system, Cooper Pratt among them, who are going to be here eventually, but they don't have that guy ready in 2025. And so I have to wonder if that's the spot they really try to address to get a bridge, you know, not a superstar, but a bridge to get you to what's coming in the minor league pipeline. Cooper Pratt, the top of that list.
You don't make the comments, you don't make those comments when you're not like at a point of a decision with a guy. You're not, or at least you're not willing to consider moving on and finding something else, whether it's short term or long term.
Yeah. Last thought here before we get to three up, three down. Sunday, Sal Frelick left the game with a hamstring issue. Sounds like it's been bothering him for a while. He had a stolen base attempt there and a sliding catch that I think maybe irritated things a little bit. I don't love the prospect of not having Sal Frelick available, but obviously we are going into the All-Star break, so he gets some rest here. And we saw him crash into a wall at the end of last season, and there was some serious question as to whether he would even be able to make the playoff roster. Brother, he made it, and then he hit a home run that, you know, probably nobody will forget, especially for two innings or so. So he's got a track record of bouncing back from this stuff. I don't feel particularly worried about it. But you know, and couple that with the Rhys Hoskins thing, like, this team, I know the pitching injuries were significant at the beginning of the year. They really were. But this team has been healthy. Christian Yelich has played almost every day. You haven't lost guys for huge chunks of time, huge difference makers. And the pitching got healthy too, to the point that when guys come back, you're like, what are we going to do with that guy? You know, we got other options. So they've been pretty healthy. You lose Hoskins, who was struggling a little bit. Losing Sal would really be a blow, I think, even though he's not, you know, it's not like he's a huge big time damage guy, but any concern there? Like, if they weren't able to have Frelick back right out of the gate, would that worry you a little bit?
I think if it's long-term, I'm worried. They have put themselves in a pretty dang good spot going into the second half. And they're also pretty healthy. And Blake Perkins was just activated off the injured list as well. So who knows if that's related to Sal or if they just felt that it was the time to bring him back. We'll see as they come back from the break. But Sal Frelick is a top, I don't know, what would you say, top eight important player to this team, top three hitter, top five player. I don't know. He's pretty high on the list because of the different ways he's able to impact the game and also the consistency with his production and his approach at the plate. It gives you something. They found, you know, whether it's him or not, they found a spark with him at leadoff. The offense has performed pretty well with him there. And maybe he does profile there a little better than Bryce Turang does. Not entirely sure how much to read into lineup machinations, but still,
yeah.
Sal Frelick has maybe been their most valuable offensive player this year, or at least their most valuable position player. It's kind of a toss up in that regard, but yeah, you don't want to lose that guy long term. But they still do have some options to fill in. Like if it's a short term IL stint, I don't really have a ton of concern.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. Blake Perkins, by the way, on Sunday was activated from his rehab and sent optioned to AAA. So that's kind of a paperwork thing. I think we saw that coming, but they do have outfield options available to them, namely Blake Perkins, if they needed to, and especially a short notice situation. Okay, let's move into some of the more granular details from the week. There's still a lot on this list that we could talk about. Here it is, our weekly segment, Three Up, Three Down.
Let's go to something that people were probably not expecting us to talk about. Elvin Rodriguez. Remember that guy?
I did not expect us to talk about Elvin Rodriguez, but go on, King.
From starting the home opener to a DFA within 3 months, it was a rough time for Elvin Rodriguez. But you know what? Considering he just kept on giving up homers at AAA, probably a fair time. The Brewers traded for Stuart Baroa. They traded with the Dodgers while they were playing the Dodgers. And Incredible. They optioned this guy to their AAA roster. He's an outfielder. Who knows if we see him, given how the Brewers use their 40-man roster. We probably do at some point. But we will not. Well, Elvin Rodriguez could clear waivers, I guess. But I'm going to guess we will not be seeing Elvin Rodriguez.
Incredible. 2 years in a row, your home opener starter does not make the roster into August. Jacob Junis, our favorite Jakub Junis, started the home opener last year, and then he got dinged up. He got hit with a fly ball, which I shouldn't laugh. It was really kind of awful at the time, but he had some bad luck there, and then he got traded to the Reds for Frankie Montas. So he was gone in August. Elvin Rodriguez did not make it all the way to August, so really interesting. I mean, the home opener person, obviously these guys started and the Brewers did not open the season at home, so this was like fourth or fifth in their rotation at the time, but yeah, it was tough for Elvin Rodriguez. Didn't quite work out. It has worked out better for some other guys that have been DFA'd, like Yoel Piamps, who's still shoving at AAA. I still think we're probably going to see him again at some point down the line. Who else? There was another guy that cleared waivers that came right back. Oh, Des Cameron's back.
Des Cameron. Vinny Capra.
He had a nice day the other day.
I hope things work out for Vinny Capra.
Me too. Yes, he was DFA'd by the White Sox. That is not words you want associated with your career at this in the year of our Lord 2025, to be DFA'd by the White Sox. My number one is the futures game. We're into All-Star Week here. We've got a little bit of a break coming up, and we've already seen some of the top prospects from around baseball. On Saturday night, the futures game was played all seven innings because reasons. I guess they just don't want any pitchers pitching. And Jesus Mate got a single. He got a hit. He had got three at-bats. He also struck out, but he ended up scoring a run on a home run. So it was nice. There was a moment because Jesus Mate is a switch hitter that he was facing off with a switch pitcher, Gerangelo Senja. Of the Mariners, a guy drafted by the Brewers, speaking of the draft, a guy drafted by the Brewers a couple years ago but did not sign. He ended up getting drafted again later in the first round instead of later in the draft as the Brewers took him. So the decision to not sign paid off handsomely for him. He was then drafted in the first round by the Mariners, and now he's a switch pitcher working his way up through the organization. Switch pitcher against switch hitter. It's always a fun setup in the rare moments that you do have a switch pitcher. Anthony Siegler, by the way, could have been a switch pitcher. He chose the position player route, but he is ambidextrous, which I talked to him about in the interview that's coming up after this. Guy who could use both hands growing up, and they just played into it, and he can still do it. He can throw with his left, he can throw with his right. He'll play outfield with his left arm and then play the infield with his right arm. It's interesting stuff. So Jesus Mate, it was just good to get the good to see him on that stage. Nothing overly shocking or anything happening in that game. He's been still doing very well with Carolina, not tearing it up per se statistically, but still, for somebody who is the youngest player in that league when the season started, 18 years old, doing quite well with the Carolina Mudcats. Jesus Mata getting the stage.
All right, JR, let's go to the second of the two walk-offs this week. Brewers trailed 5-3 entering the ninth inning on Saturday. We told you about Andrew Vaughn's double, but a key play in that inning, Andrew Monasterio, speaking of starring in his role, comes off the bench and advances to third base on a ground ball hit to the third baseman. You don't see that much, but he did a good job of reading the pitcher, reading that the third baseman was not going to be able to get over there. And, like, frankly, when I first saw him break, I'm like, oh, the timing of this isn't going to work. He's going to be out. But the whole point was, there's no one to cover the base. No one was there, so they didn't even make a throw. So some really heads-up base running that might have won them the game. Moments later, when Caleb Durbin lines a ball that probably would have been caught by the first baseman had he not been playing in with the runner at third. You know, so, hey, look at the Brewers doing their little Brewers things. It's always impossible to tell, like, I don't know. Like, sometimes you feel like you're fabricating something of like, this is the Brewers, this is meaningful baseball, this is winning baseball. It feels a little silly to like give in to that cliche, and then they do it, and then they advance to third base on a grounder to third, and then their 5'6" third baseman lines a ball in the spot where the first baseman would have otherwise been if that runner didn't advance, and you're like, you know what, maybe it really is their edge. I don't know.
Yeah, that inside-out swing from Caleb Durbin, wanted to go to right field, which isn't like his specialty by any means, but he's like just sprinkled one in the right spot. And like you said, with the infield in, it absolutely would have been caught. It would have been caught, and it would not have. I mean, they would have needed a hit to get the run. And win
he
the game
actually
instead.
Is, and I would have said this before his three walk-offs, which is crazy for a guy who didn't even start the season here in the first half. Wild. He actually is probably. He might be the guy for that situation because he hits fly. Well, he pops up a lot, so maybe not, but he hits the ball in the air. He's not going to hit a weak grounder or a hard grounder at someone. If he's going to hit a grounder, it might be a weak grounder. So he's got a good approach to get the ball in the air, which is really all you need there. And he doesn't swing and miss, which is really what you need there. So maybe Caleb Durbin, maybe he is the pick for the at-bat in that spot.
Walk-off sacrifice fly, walk-off home run, and now a walk-off single. Probably would have been a double under other circumstances since the ball kind of hugged the line a little bit. But the Brewers come through. And then let's flash back for me. My next one, going back to that first walk-off, to Jackson Chourio. His first career walk-off. I was surprised to learn, Kurt, he was the fifth youngest Brewers player to hit a walk-off. Number five. I can understand him not being number one at age 21 in a couple months, but it turns out there have been younger. One of them is Prince Fielder, who, by the way, might show up on this podcast. It is possible that Prince Fielder will show up on this podcast sometime in the near future. Just saying. Little tease for perhaps what is to come. And Sixto Lizcano is on this list. Gary Sheffield was still a teen, or I think he was 19 when he hit his first walk-off, hit his first big league home run, and then had a walk-off later in the game. So wrote about that at jsonline.com, profiling all the guys who are younger than Jackson Chourio. But his first career walk-off, very confident single swing after the Brewers had tied that game in the ninth against the Dodgers. Jose Quintana, we haven't even said his name, but he had a great start against the Dodgers. He's had a couple really good ones in a row at a time when I feel like the microscope is on him a little bit because Nestor Cortez is working his way back, and the natural spot in the rotation to take, if you choose to take it, would be over Jose Quintana. And he looked really good for, you know, the, you could nitpick certainly, but second pretty good start in a row, and And then the Brewers were able to hang on and win that game, which is crazy. So Churio swinging a hot bat. He obliterated a ball on Sunday, just put it into orbit for a 3-run homer that turned a game that was close in the ninth into an absolute laugher. And I think we might see a pretty great second half from this guy, Kurt. I really still am, you know, it's been up and down, and there's, oh gosh, he's going to be so special in the second half. He's going to be just unbelievable. We haven't even seen how unbelievable this man can be. It's coming. Second half is going to be Jackson Churio's time to shine. He's going to run this team.
All right. I love you calling a shot. While we're watching the draft, while the Brewers are about to make their pick, and you can read about it on jsonline.com per usual.
As soon as we write it,
all five picks today, as a matter of fact. Read about it.
Oh, that's fun.
Braylon Payne, last year's first round pick. He has been scalding hot of late, and he had a very, very flashy walk-off home run on Saturday night, not long after Caleb Durbin's hit a nice bow on his tenure as the Brewers' most recent first round pick, because he'll be replaced by someone in like the next 20 minutes after we record this. He's flashy. He's got some personality. He's got some swagger. He's got a little bit of juice to him. And it's fun to see him accessing some of those very, very raw tools, very, very raw potential this season after some ups and downs through the first 3 or so months.
Yeah, it has been up and down, but, and again, we've said this a few times, but when he was drafted last year, because this is how the Brewers operate, it was, oh, they drafted a guy that they can save a bunch of money on for guys later in the draft. And I don't think that's incorrect. I think that's what happened. You know, they drafted
him. They didn't save money on him though. They didn't save as much as you would have thought.
No, you're right. They didn't save as much as you would have thought.
Yeah.
And then he ends up being actually quite good. So, you know, sometimes it isn't what it looks like. I still assume the Brewers are going to draft guys that are a little bit of a reach in the first round, second round, and then go after bigger guys to get that holistic class going. Did not work out though last year because Chris Lavonis did not end up signing. You know, he ended up going elsewhere. So the Brewers lost out on that strategy. Still looks like they got a pretty good gem there in the class. So that Carolina Mudcats team still waiting for those guys to get promoted to the Wisconsin Timberrattlers. So the family can go take a look. We've got some rain checks that we're going to be using as soon as possible. My number three to close it down. Kurt, did you know Jacob Mizorowski was named to the All-Star team? I'm not going to revisit that again. I'm still just blown. It's just blown my mind. I can't believe it. You know, actually, we kind of have crossed everything off of our list. The only thing that's still left is Adrian Hauser throwing up again in the dugout. Adrian Hauser, though, I want to talk about him because when the teams were named, Shane Smith, the former Brewers prospect, was named as an all-star pitcher from the White Sox. The White Sox needed a representative. Shane Smith was very good this year. Possible mistake that the Brewers made not protecting him in the Rule 5 draft. But it's also worth mentioning that his last several starts, I think his last one was okay, but the four before that were really bad. So like his numbers have really kind of fallen off big time. And you can imagine that most of the voting and the decision-making was done kind of before some of that. So, and Shane Smith is still a great story. I don't want to disparage him. It's not, you know, like you hope for the best for him. He's gone from Rule 5 to All-Star. That's a really, really cool story. That's only happened once before in history. Dan Ugla of the Marlins did that. But Adrian Hauser has been awesome. Awesome for the White Sox. And it's only been 9 starts at the time. Oh, Gavin Killen, Milton High School native, taken number 13 by the San Francisco Giants. That's awesome. Gavin Killen, congratulations, University of Tennessee, but Milton High School first. You know, Adrian Hauser with 8 starts or 9 starts, it's like, well, you can't put him in the All-Star game because he's got 8 starts. So what are you going to do about it? Except now, Jacob Mizorowski with 5 starts is going to the All-Star game. Adrian Hauser is a snub officially. He should be representing the Chicago White Sox. Former Brewers legend Adrian Hauser, who did throw up this week, but also still shoved. He's pitching quite well for the Chicago White Sox. And with 9 starts under his belt, that is All-Star material, Kurt.
Hey, Andrew Vaughn has reached the threshold. Put him in
the game. He has. A whole week of baseball. He has 10 RBIs. That's like a whole season now.
Yeah, 5 games is all you need. All you need, folks.
It's true.
We did not spend any time talking about Trevor McGill being an all-star, so I just want to give him a quick shout-out before we move on to other things, especially in that game on Wednesday that they won in walk-off fashion against the Dodgers. He comes in extra innings, automatic runner on second, and just obliterates three excellent hitters, Freddie Freeman, Andy Páez, and Tommy Edman. Three strikeouts, sets the table for the Brewers to win that game. McGill has played very well. He has pitched very well. I don't think you look at his resume and just think, oh, yeah, definitely an all-star at first anyway, but he is second in the National League in saves. He has pitched very well. He has been very good when called upon, and he's had a couple of hiccups like anybody in his position would have. That home run to Arcia that we mentioned is one of them, but he is going to his first all-star game at age 31. That is very cool. It's cool because he was kind of left for dead, DFA'd a couple times, I think, by other organizations. And here he is now going to the All-Star game and a very central part of the Milwaukee Brewers. So I wanted to mention him as well. Crazy stuff. Kurt, that's it. That's what we got on 3 Up, 3 Down. Now we're going to go back in time to explore some moments from Brewers past. Here it is. Remember when. Kurt, I wanted to call this the best week in Brewers history. That was like my initial thought. Oh my gosh, they swept the Dodgers and Mizorowski and Brandon Woodruff pitching again. You know, even if you extend it one more extra day to last Sunday, called Woodruff's debut part of this great week. But I could not in good conscience actually put that at the top of the list. The end of the 2018 season does exist, playing into game 163, where the Brewers ended up winning 12 games in a row through the playoffs. Like you have to think some of that baseball, which was just extraordinary, you know, blood pumping, incredible experience at American Family Field. That's got to be on the list. But I think the actual answer comes to us in the year 1987. It's team streak. And I would say that when two games in the course of a week could wind up as they did on my list of 50 greatest moments in Wisconsin sports history, which I put together in 2020, you probably have to say that was one of the best weeks of Brewers baseball, at least as the regular season goes. And that's what was happening at the start of the 1987 season. The Brewers, of course, famously winning 13 games in a row. It culminated really actually with the 12th game, the win on Easter Sunday that I think a lot of people remember when the Brewers had a walk-off. They tied it in the 9th, won it in the 10th. Dale Swaim with the winner, Rob Deer with the game-tying blow, the home run. That was a pretty amazing moment. But here's how that week unfolded, because some of these details, of course, will be forgotten. Easter Sunday and another game in here that we'll talk about. This is the start to the season. They open with the American League champion Boston Red Sox, and they sweep them. The Red Sox, they ended up having a pretty bad year in 1987, but that 86 team, of course, that's the Bill Buckner World Series that they lost to the Mets. They come back and the Brewers beat them right away. In fact, the Brewers then have back-to-back games with 8-run innings. This is even before we get to the good week. They have 8-run innings in back-to-back games, and they win one. I think one is 12-11 on a BJ Surhoff home run. BJ Surhoff, if you want to make a Mizorowski comparison, he was the number one pick in the draft. He's the only player that the Brewers have selected number one overall in a draft, and he was making his debut. It was very exciting for Brewers fans to see BJ Surhoff, and he came out guns a blazing. He was really hitting the ball. He was playing great behind the plate. At one point, I think he'd thrown out 5 of the first 7 would-be base stealers or something like that. But the week in question begins April 12th with a 7-5 win over the Rangers. Surhoff drives in 2 runs, bases loaded single in the 12th, so it's an extra innings walk-off win. I think it was just 3 of 5 base stealers that he'd thrown out now that I'm reading my notes. They win 6-3 against Baltimore on April 13th. Paul Molitor leads off the game with a home run. The team hits 5 homers in a 7-4 win, so they're on the roll at this point. Then comes April 15th, tax day, and Juan Yavis throws the first and only no-hitter in Milwaukee Brewers history, at least as the only no-hitter that, of course, was thrown by one individual. You had the Corbin Burns Josh Hader special in 2021. But the Nieves no-hitter, pretty special. We talked about him a couple weeks ago when we were talking about big-time debuts, comparing it a little bit to Mizorowski. That game, I don't remember this, was 1-0 in the 7th inning. I knew the Brewers won that game handily over the Orioles, but it was 1-0 in the 7th, and there was a 2-run double off Mike Flanagan. Greg Brock adds a 3-run homer. I think it was Yount who hit the 2-run double. I don't have that in my notes. Might have been Molitor. So it ended up being a 7-0 game. Robin Yount famously ends that with a diving catch. So that's great. The Brewers are still winning. They have not lost a game at this point in the season. April 17th, 10-2 win over Texas. This is back at home. 41,500 fans are at this game. And I got to tell you, at that time, April games at County Stadium, you're talking about 9,000 fans. So 41,000 fans. Baseball fever has caught on in Milwaukee. Teddy Higuera is dealing. He has got the fans chanting his name. Brewers end up winning that game. They tack on a bunch late, end up winning that game. April 18th. So this is the day before Easter Sunday. So they've won 10 games in a row. And they win 4-3. Dan Plesac strands two runners on in the eighth, handles business in the ninth. And that leads into that incredible game, April 19th, Easter Sunday, 1987, one of the great games, if not the greatest regular season game in Milwaukee Brewers history. They go on, they win one more after that for 13 to start the year. That, Kurt, that is the greatest week in Milwaukee Brewers regular season history. But this one's on the list somewhere. There is just so much happening. This one, I think, Kurt, is on the list somewhere.
You done now?
I'm done now. Do you have anything to say?
All right. No, I wasn't alive.
You weren't alive in 1987. No. Of course you weren't.
I have never heard enough in my life about the 1987 Brewers or the 1982 Brewers. Two teams that I think we should learn more about.
You are being sarcastic. I think Kurt being mean
for no reason.
The 1987 team, the only reason you know all about that one is because I talk about it. I talk about that team nonstop. I think that team is fascinating. There's so much going on there.
They were a good team. They just kind of got robbed by baseball's setup at that point.
For sure. For sure. They would have unquestionably been a playoff team. I mean, they won 13 games and lost 12 in a row. You've got the Teddy Higuera scoreless inning streak, the Paul Molitor 39-game hitting streak, which has not been matched since. I mean, you had Easter Sunday, the no-hitter. Like, there's just so much going on. Cecil Cooper not playing. It was a weird thing that was going on. Another streak. Anyway, wild stuff. I love that team. I love thinking about that team. I wasn't really cognizant, but I'm happy to say I was alive for the 1987 team streak run. All right, that's enough of the past. Let's look now to, well, whatever it is that Kurt Hoag has in his bag of tricks for his take of the week. Here it is, the way we end every episode of Microbrew. It is Kurt Blanche.
How is the Futures game on Saturday? This is not a very long take for me. This is, it just blows my mind that they're playing the Futures game on Saturday at like the middle of the day while everyone else is playing in baseball. Shouldn't this be like a showcase event of some sorts? Now I'm back to ripping MLB for not marketing its young players enough, but it feels like this should have a standalone time of some sorts. And I guess it used to, right? It used to have the Sunday night block. I don't remember if they played a Sunday night game during that time as well. Probably not, given the All-Star weekend was coming up. And I get the draft is Sunday night now, but there are ways to do this that give these young players a little more shine. They deserve it. And I think it would be fun for fans too, because, you know, maybe Jacob Mizrowski is in the Futures game and then he stars in the big leagues in 2 years. And it would be fun to have watched him at an early age, in early time. That's all I got.
Jacob Mizrowski, who threw in excess of 100 miles an hour in the Futures game, definitely got people's attention 2 years ago. But I, Kurt, you know, I've given this some thought. I'm going to go the other way on the Futures game. I think they need to bury it. It's over. It isn't working. Yeah. Like, Major League Baseball doesn't want to highlight it because of what you said. They put it on a Saturday afternoon against other Major League Baseball games. They put it on MLB Network. They obviously can't sell it. They've made it seven innings, presumably, and I don't even know why, but I would assume it's because most teams don't want their prized pitching prospects throwing meaningless innings in the middle of a season. I don't think it works. And then you see what they're doing with the spring breakout in spring training, where they do have like one team's top prospects against another team's top prospects. I love that idea, and I love that you get to do that. That makes a little more sense in the schedule of the season. I think the Futures game doesn't work for Major League Baseball. And it's a shame because it's awesome. And like you said, I love seeing these guys like just before they break big. But I think that baseball is telling us that they don't even value it. Seven innings, come on.
Sure. But I to that point, I do not think MLB's All-Star Weekend needs much of a shakeup. I think it's good as it is. I think the draft home run derby All-Star game is it captures the attention of baseball fans, and I think they should not be going out here and looking to try to change things around a ton, because the status quo around most sports and their All-Star games is to shake things up, as we know. But even though baseball's game maybe doesn't have the juice that it used to, I think it's still the A1 of All-Star weekends and events, aside from obviously what we saw the NHL do this year. There's not quite a way for baseball to match that, but they do have eyes on it for three straight days, which is pretty good.
We are still, as we record this in real time, a few picks away from the Brewers. We will have to shelve the draft talk or the draft class talk, which, again, it probably makes more sense to look at it holistically anyway. That'll be coming next week. We will, we won't have many baseball games to discuss anyway, so that's probably just as well. Kurt, any last thoughts before I move into my interviews? What do you have? What is your final bon mot?
The Brewers are going to take I'm going back to the Sal Frelick roots, a slappy, gritty, defensive-minded college player. That's what I'm going with. No idea. Oh, I have no idea who's in this class.
It's always good to predict things that will be completely, evaluatable, because they'll have pasts until when people hear this in their headphones and their ears. So always good to immediately show yourself. But yes, Gavin Killen, Milwaukee adjacent native. You can't say Milwaukee adjacent, that's just too far away. Milton, I would love to do that to you, but Wisconsinite anyway, getting taken in the first 15 picks. That's cool. But that's going to do it for this edition of Microbrew. We'll be back, of course, with you next week. We'll only have three games to discuss, as well as an All-Star game. Jacob Mizrowski pitching in the All-Star game, ? That should be super, super fun. In the meantime here, I do still have a couple interviews for you. I've got, we'll start with Andrew Vaughn, the hero of the week, one of the heroes of the week. There are many, but spent a little time chatting with him, getting to know him a little bit. And then Anthony Siegler, a guy who had a big two-run single on Sunday before that game got out of hand. That was a pretty big hit. He's a newcomer to the team. Chatted with him about his ambidextrousness, among other things. So give a listen to that. Thank you for listening to this edition of Microbrew. We will talk to you again next week. Bye-bye. This is Andrew Vaughn, new first baseman for the Milwaukee Brewers. You saw him homer in his first at-bat as a member of the Milwaukee Brewers. We'll talk about that in a second. I'm going to go back to your time at Cal. I saw it indicated that you were a big fisherman, that fishing was your thing. So do you have a good fishing story, a good catch that you... that you like to tell people?
Oh, I got tons.
Yeah.
Every offseason I try to go to the Pacific Northwest. Or
oh, wow. Real
California
fishing.
With my buddies and do some steelhead fishing. That's always a trip. Always okay. A good time. Caught a tarpon.
Okay. Excellent.
Lightning on the end of your rod.
How heavy is that? How heavy of a fish is that?
I use probably like 80 pounds.
But gosh.
They get up to like 200 plus pounds.
Okay. Holy smokes. This is deep sea fishing we're talking about at this point, right?
It's in a bay, yeah.
Okay, in a bay. All right. Dang, that's incredible. You're from California, so I guess that makes sense that you would do some of that. I saw one of the teams you played for, the Healdsburg Prune Packers. I saw Packers. That's what caught my eye, being a Wisconsin thing. But was that like a Northwoods League equivalent, like a summer league equivalent?
Yeah, it was in the CCL at the time.
Okay, incredible mascot there. I believe you were undrafted coming out of high school, and then you end up obviously as the number three overall pick. What changed for you? What was it about? Like maybe there was something about high school that people didn't scout you properly or whatever, or did something change for your game that you became such an elite player at Cal?
I think I fell in love with the weight room. The strength program we had there, and just kind of, becoming myself in the box and on the field.
Okay.
Just trusting what I'm good at, and focusing on that and just trying to be really consistent with it every single game, every single at bat.
Okay. You've done a lot with Team USA. Did that enter the picture right away in college? It seems like you were always playing with some Team USA squad.
Yeah, so I was lucky enough when I was 15, got to play for the 15U team, go to Columbia. That was a really cool experience.
And okay.
Then in college, I got to play back-to-back years, which was really special. I got to go on some cool road trips. I got to go to Cuba. That was really cool.
And you guys won. I think you were tournament MVP when you beat Japan. I think that was on U.S. soil.
Yep, that was.
Okay.
That was on the East Coast Tour.
Very cool.
Just pretty special. Great group of guys.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'll even go back further because you grew up north of the Bay Area, Santa Rosa, right?
Yep.
A lot of Giants games, a lot of Giants teams that won World Series, the World Series while you were younger. Do you have any particular memories of going to, I assume, Pac Bell Park at that point?
Yep. shoot, I remember going. And there was always crowd noise.
Yeah.
It's always buzzing there. And they would announce Barry Bonds.
Yeah. And so you got to see him.
The place would get dead silent. Everybody focused on that at bat going on right now. Didn't matter what they were doing. Everything just dropped, stopped. And they were watching him hit. And I'll never forget that.
Do you remember watching him break that home run record? Do you remember where you were?
I don't.
No?
I don't. I got to see some special. I think I saw five something when I was a lot younger. But I don't really remember too
much. Sure. What about those World Series teams? Were you when they went in?
I don't remember the years. Is it 10 and 12?
I think it was 10, 12, 14.
Okay, okay. All the even years, that's right.
Went to a good bit, definitely in 10 and 12, that I can remember. Just special game.
Awesome. How much did winning the Golden Spikes mean to you? Ricky Weeks won the Golden Spikes, so associate manager. How much did that award mean to you? Because it happened so early, like you weren't even draft eligible at that point, right?
Yeah, you know, it was special. It was such an honor. You know, had a good season that year. And just was blessed to play that way.
Yeah. It seems like you were more of an average hitter, or maybe that's what the scouting report was on you before college. Is that the weight room thing that you're talking about, where your power picked up once you got into college, or did you change something with your swing?
I'd always like to think I'm a hitter first.
Sure.
I think every guy wants to think of themselves as a hitter first. And then I think definitely the weight room stuff helped with the power and just being able to apply it in game.
Yeah. Are you familiar with Greg Vaughn? There was Vaughn's Valley here, and he was a right-handed hitter for the Brewers back in the 90s, late 80s, early 90s. There was a sign, kind of famous sign, Vaughn's Valley. I'm dying to see if that comes back. It wasn't a very flashy sign. It was just lettering, but I'd be curious to see. That would be pretty wild if something like that came back. Just in terms of getting traded, leaving the White Sox, I know you've been in that organization for a long time. The idea of a fresh start, is that something you feel like applies to you, that's really something that's going to benefit you?
Yeah, you know, the beginning of this season wasn't going so well. It was a pretty rough start, you know, and then getting an option, kind of like a reset.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the trade's similar to that. It's a reset, refresh, you know, new group, new people, just taking it head on.
That first home run, is that a keepsake, or is that not really is that just a footnote in your career at this point? The first home run with the Brewers.
Yeah, you know, definitely very special. You know, coming in first game, being able to help the team win.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do here. I want to help the team win in any way I can.
Okay. I mentioned the fishing. Anything else? Last question. Anything else about you outside of baseball that you would want people to know about you, or that is maybe you would regard as interesting about you?
Shoot, a lot of fishing, hanging out with my wife and my dog.
Sure.
We got a mini Bernie Doodle.
Okay, mini Bernie Doodle.
She's cute as a button.
What's her name?
Her name's Ginger.
Ginger, very good.
Yeah, pretty simple guy.
All right, excellent. Andrew Vaughn, first baseman for the Milwaukee Brewers. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
My guest is Anthony Siegler, new infielder / outfielder / catcher / I don't know. What position do you tell people that you play when you when they ask?
Right now, I'll just tell them infield and catcher.
Yeah. All right, infield and catcher. The thing I think a lot of people know about you growing up in Georgia is that you could use both hands, ambidextrous, switch fielder, whatever you want to call it. But you were also a switch pitcher, and I feel like that's probably where you might get the most advantage out of being able to go lefty or righty. How close were you to being a pitcher? You know, was that something you were possibly recruited to do at Florida, or was it just going to be, you know, position player?
Yeah, possibly was talked about when I went to Florida. Just before, like, I committed there. But for the most part, it was just infield and catcher, occasional outfield. But, I mean, maybe close righty if I need to. But really just the pitching was something to do throughout high school, maybe college, but more so just having fun with it just because I could
sure.
do it.
Yeah. There's a pitcher named Gerangelo Sencha, who I think he's in the Mariners organization. Brewers actually drafted him a few years ago when he didn't sign. Do you see a guy like that and you think, maybe there was a pathway where I could have done the switch pitching thing? It would have been pretty unique.
I mean, for him to be doing what he's doing, because I've seen it, I mean, it's pretty unreal.
Yeah.
So that's props to him for being able to do that. And it's unbelievable that he can. I don't think I was at his level to be able to do that. I wish I was. I was, but but for him to be doing what he's doing and having really good success that I've seen is really amazing.
If you played outfield here, you'd throw with your left hand, is that right? You got two gloves?
Yeah. Okay. I would probably do it lefty, just because when I did do it, I would play outfield lefty, so
yeah.
It's just comfortability thing, I'd probably do it.
Okay. Do you get more power with your left arm? You know, more?
I'd say more righty, just because I do that a little bit more.
Sure.
I mean, it's not like my left arm is really bad. I'd say it's kind of lower velo now just because I don't do it as much.
Sure.
But I think I'd still be able to maintain it.
I read about your dad kind of encouraging the, you know, sort of your natural inclination to use both hands. Mm-hmm. And that catcher was at the last position that you really took to, that you were like 12 when you caught for the first time. And now then that became your thing. Mm-hmm. Is catching still something in your future? Like, you've played so much infield now in Nashville and here. Like, is that dead, or is that still something that you would keep going?
No, I don't think it's dead at all. I mean, I think it's just something great that I have in my back pocket because I feel like I can do it at this level. Hopefully, get a few innings here. But I mean, as far as right now, I'm just trying to do anything to help the club win. And if that's catching in the future, that's catching in the future. But right now, it's mostly infield, mainly third base. That don't mean I can't touch up on it and get better at it and keep on working at it. But I mean, I feel like I can see a future in catching. But for right now, what they're asking me for is mainly third base. So I'm gonna just do that.
How about batting right-handed? Is that something you'd still? Still do
there? Okay. I feel like I'm still able to do that.
Sure.
Whether that be now or in the future, I feel like I can do it. As of right now, with the role that I'm playing, I feel like is just matchups against righties. And so for right now, it's just one I'm going to just stick with lefty right now.
I read that you're named after Tony Phillips, former big leaguer. Kind of famously, for people who know the old story here, he got into a fight with a fan in Milwaukee.
Yeah, I mean, it's
you know the story.
Yeah, it was just having my dad tell me who I'm named after, and then telling him like just funny stories of that, and him growing up around him a little bit, or getting to know him, it was amazing. So yeah, but looking back on that story, it's just funny to look at him and just kind of just how not necessarily crazy he was, but just he just didn't care and just loved the game. So
and he is friends with your dad. I didn't include that. Okay, so you get your first hit in New York. Can't imagine better poetry than that. I know, you know, coming up through the Yankees organization, I'm sure you thought you'd get your first hit in New York, your first big league hit. Yeah. Where is that baseball? What memorabilia do you have from that moment? How are you remembering that?
Right now, the baseball is actually like just in the hotel room.
Sure, understood.
I meant to give it to my mom, but I know for All-Star break, and I'll be going back home, and that'll be either be going up to my house in Tampa, or I'm gonna give it to my mom.
Perfect.
So she'll have that, or I will. But either way, it's a great memory.
Yeah. What I don't know if you'd call it whatever the stumbling blocks were in New York. Was it just, did you just need a fresh start? I mean, is that how you'd classify?
Oh, I mean, some would say.
Okay.
I think, obviously, being able to come over here, being able to come here and start fresh, clean slate, that definitely helps. But,
sure.
But, I mean, I'm just here to play baseball, play to the best of my ability, whether that be here or somewhere else. So
sure.
I just want to just help the team win in any way and just be prepared.
You have some Navajo heritage. What is your relationship to that? How big is that in your life?
It's very big in my life, especially my mom being full blood Navajo.
Sure.
And I got grandparents that are still living out in the Navajo reservation. Pretty amazing. So I know they talk to me a lot about the influence I can have over there and I want to have. Just is pretty amazing.
All right, last question. Anything else what should people know about you that has nothing to do with baseball? What are your outside interests, your hobbies?
Outside interests and hobbies, like just honestly just going out and just probably just going on a walk.
It is a very busy life.
Yeah,
as a baseball
talking to my siblings. I do that often.
How many siblings do you have?
I got three.
Three, okay.
One brother, two sisters. So anytime I'm able to call them, catch up, I do it when I can, and then call some of my old teammates with the Yankees. And that's really it. So with the time that I do got, I just like to just kind of just relax and take a deep breath and just go chill, really.
All right, Anthony Siegler, thank you so much, sir.
Thank you so much.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.